It doesn't take anyone in medicine very long to realize that the idea that you will be kind of stuck working, as a 1.0 FTE full time from beginning of profession till 65, 67, like it may not be sustainable. And I was already all, bordering on burnout. This is all pre-COVID. And that's when I realized, like, okay, there's probably something more to this personal finance game than just hurry up and be debt free as fast as you can. And then I went down the rabbit hole of like, okay, how do I build some assets? How do I actually create income outside of work? And that was really the beginning of actually creating some type of change in my day-to-day life.
What if you could reclaim hours of free time each week, create legacy building wealth, and devote more energy to your passion projects without giving up on your career as a life-saving MD? Dr. Vikram Raya is a functional cardiologist, high-performance coach, and real estate expert, is here to give you the tools, strategies, and solutions you need to transform your life, unlock your limitless potential, and achieve greatness, all while freeing up your precious time. Welcome to Limitless MD. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to another episode of Limitless MD. I'm your host, Vikram Raya, and today I have a special guest. Her name is Kristen Burtson, and she is a phenom in her field of being a physician assistant, and she's helps nurse practitioners, she's helps PharmDs and other non-physician health professionals achieve success in business and life. She has her own coaching program. She's also learned to become a sommelier. She's a super mom of a couple of kids and a dog. And so if you want someone who can handle all of it and still find time to help others get a leg up, you can't go further than Kristen. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here.
So I'm assuming, like many of us, we all struggled with debt. We all struggled with challenges getting into the medical profession. But you decided not to just play the typical game that we all play, which is work hard, save your money, try to invest, but then, like, put a ton of hours in. You've flipped the script. Tell me how you did that.
Well, I flipped the script later. I started playing the game like everybody else. And when I graduated from MBA school, I had $161,000 in debt, and I hadn't structured it well. A lot of it was private and high interest. I had no idea what I was doing when I took out the loans, like most folks. And I really didn't have anyone speaking into my life from a personal finance standpoint outside of like Dave Ramsey. That's all I knew. That's all I had heard. And so I took the approach of, I'm going to pay off my student loan debt really quickly. And as a PA, you don't earn enough from a single, standard job to pay off $161,000 at lightning speed. And so my husband and I decided, okay, we're going to live off of $35,000 a year, which this was, 10 years ago. So inflation, right, adjusted, it would probably be more than 50 now. But still,
an intellectual decision to make.
Oh, yeah. It was, we were very frugal, and it still wasn't enough. So I picked up a bunch of work. Back then, PAs didn't really do residencies as they do now, but I basically structured my own little residency in the hospital and worked about 85 hours a week. I had four per diem jobs and a full-time job, and then we just put everything towards a student loan debt.
How long did it take?
16 months. So we paid about $10,000 a month for the duration. And when it was all said and done, I looked up. I was really proud of myself. And then realized I'm not wealthy. We don't have any assets. We don't have any additional flexibility or freedoms that we really didn't have before. I still have to show up at work tomorrow. And that's when I realized, like, okay, there's probably something more to this personal finance game than just hurry up and be debt-free as fast as you can. And then I went down the rabbit hole of like, okay, how do I build some assets? How do I actually create income outside of work? And that was really the beginning of actually creating some type of change in my day-to-day life.
So let me stop you there, because that's already an amazing story. Just to pay off the debt in that record amount of time, I don't care, if you're a physician or a PA or MP or a PharmD, that's pretty quick. And that's a lot of sacrifice. But weren't you just glad to just say, hey, I got the money, I'm good. Let me just now slow down a little bit and just earn and save. What made you say, hey, I need to become wealthy, or I need to take it to the next level? Because that's, a lot of physicians don't think that way. And I would probably argue that a lot of NPs and PAs don't think that way either.
That's a really good question. I think inherently I'm sort of a ladder climber. And I realized I had sort of reached the top rung of that ladder in terms of like, how, aggressive can I be with this debt? And once I became aware of like, oh, there's another ladder. There's people earning $100,000 a year from short-term rentals. There's people with, $1 million in investable assets. I went, oh, I'm at the bottom rung of this ladder. Like, let me start climbing. Part of that is my inherent nature. And then honestly, part of it is it doesn't take anyone in medicine very long to realize that the idea that you will be kind of stuck working, you know, as a 1.0 FTE full time from beginning of profession till 65, 67, like it may not be sustainable. And I was already, you know, bordering on burnout. This is all pre-COVID, and realized like this isn't going to be the long-term plan. And so those two things kind of merged for me to realize I need to take a deeper dive into what it actually looks like to build some wealth.
Did you like declare something to your husband and to your friends and family? Like, hey, mark my words, by X amount of time, I'm going to be doing something different, or I'm going to hit this goal? Or how did that transpire?
To my husband, yes. I was like, we're going to be millionaires by the time we're 35. And then we've reached it. So that was exciting. Yeah, we did actually quite a bit better than that. But it's one of those things where money's still kind of an odd topic. And I still, you know, even after doing the debt thing, I felt a little bit weird about talking to colleagues about it, talking to some certain friends about it. And so the idea that I would go out and say, hey, I'm going to like, you know, become a millionaire or something, that still felt very off. And so I didn't tell anyone really outside of my husband. And we kind of just put our nose down and went to work, not in secret, but in private, really, until we started getting some traction.
Your husband in medicine as well?
No, he's an area manager for a construction company.
Okay. So he has some connection to real estate, at least.
Yes, he does. That's helpful.
Okay, got it. And so you guys had a vision, you had a dream, and you also said, hey, that is what most people do. That's not what I'm going to do. And so it sounds like you went from, and I think I did a newsletter on this and a podcast episode on this, not a podcast, a YouTube video on it. It was, you know, we all start off in the Ramsey world and then we sometimes move to the Kiyosaki world. So that's sort of what happened here.
Sounds like a general flow. Yeah, that tracks.
Okay. And why did you choose real estate as your, I guess, wealth creation vehicle?
Actually, good question. That was later. We started by, in the most boring way, to be honest, investing in low-cost index funds and ETFs and like having a very high investing rate. And that alone is what we did for years. And it's funny because it's like so simple and so it's easy, right? It's not necessarily a decision a lot of people want to make, is to have a high investing rate like that. But at the end of the day, once you're in the groove of the lifestyle, it's easy. And it wasn't until we had traction there that we moved into real estate. And I'm honestly grateful, as I think the more that I've gotten into that space, the more I've realized, you know, you can like lose the farm, so to speak, if you don't know what you're doing. And so having a little bit of structure behind us and some capital and some security made that process actually a lot easier.
And are you still practicing critical care, Jill?
Yeah, part-time, but yes.
Part-time. Okay. And when did you decide that you're going to start coaching or teaching or sharing your journey with the world?
That's a good question. That was a slow process. It actually started with people like at the hospital where I work asking for help. Once they kind of had an idea that I've had some success in that area, and then it expanded from there kind of by word of mouth only. And it was a few years in that I decided like, well, I'm going to try to create a website and a social media platform. And I was scared. I had tons of imposter syndrome. I remember like breaking into a full-blown sweat before I pressed like publish on the website. But I realized over time, like most PAs, NPs, and pharmacists have the exact same problems that I had. There's not a lot of people speaking directly to them. And so I felt like there was a void. When I first started talking about money, you know, I talked about money in general terms. And then actually, I was on a podcast with another PA and we got off and he said, just so you know, there's so many PAs and NPs that literally need this specific to them. Like you could just help them. And I realized like, oh, well, you know, the expression Ed Milet, like you're most qualified to help the person that you used to be. I'm like, well, that was me, right? Like a PA struggling with money. And so I really delved into that space in particular.
Yeah. And I just want to stack on what you're saying. So Kristen is saying essentially, you know, your ideal avatar, if you're a coach or consultant or some kind of services, finance or services or something, is you like 5 years ago, right? That's the ideal avatar. So that's awesome. So when did you start your PA career and how many years has it been since all of your journeys? Like, I just want to get a sense of timeline.
Yeah, 2016 is when I started. So I'm coming up on the decade mark, which is exciting.
Practicing.
Spend the whole time in the hospital. I did a little bit of hospitalist work, and then I've done inpatient cardiology and critical care since then.
And then how many years since the investing journey started?
Well, that was right after we finished paying off the student loan debt. So probably 18 months into practice, I would say, 16 months of student loans. And then pretty quickly, we transitioned to investing about 50 to 70% of gross income, kind of simmered a little bit closer to 50% mark once we had kids.
Yeah.
Expensive, right? But we kept that up. Really, we still have an investing rate that's quite high. And doing that in our late 20s and early 30s was the thing that really changed everything.
Right. So this may be a good time to talk about, like, you know, sometimes PAs, NPs, PharmDs, you know, other successful professionals who make six figures, sometimes they feel like, oh, the doctors make more, you know, I'm going to be behind or whatever. I mean, it's not a competition per se, but it's just, you know, there's maybe a, you know, like a mindset that, oh, it's easy for them because they make more money. What would you say to that concept? And there's some, you know, physicians who don't make as much as their specialist colleagues, like, you know, family medicine physicians make 150, maybe, you know, pediatricians make a little bit less. And so help them understand that it's not about how much money you make, right? It's, you know, what's the unique strategy there?
Yeah. So the funny thing is, I think you're a mindset person. It is a mindset thing, right? Like, I've sat in group events at like wealth building virtual summits and heard physicians who, like you mentioned, are in lower subspecialties, specialties like pediatrics or family medicine, saying like, well, I'm not going to be able to do this because I'm not a surgeon, right? And then the same thing, that belief holds true for a lot of six-figure earners in my space. Now, mind you, there are definitely PAs, NPs, pharmacists who are, you know, clearing 300K and earn quite a bit of money for the level of training and debt. And there are PAs, NPs, and pharmacists that earn, you know, $95,000 a year. But within that whole spectrum, the key is to first recognize that having that income is enough to build wealth. It really depends on your utilization of the income and your ability to kind of create the gap, right? And your between your expenses and your income is the first step. But if you don't redirect the gap into creating some type of investable asset base, you'll never end up wealthy. So if you can do that, if you can create a gap and then create some assets with the gap, it's almost inevitable that you're going to end up building some wealth. Of course, you know, if you earn $800,000 a year and you can invest $400,000 a year, you'll build numerically more wealth faster. But if you can invest $40,000 a year earning $120,000, you'll still end up a millionaire in due time and a multimillionaire if you keep going. So the idea that you have to be, you know, a fancy subspecialized surgeon, for example, to end up wealthy ends up becoming a total fallacy when you just look at the math.
Yeah. And what I really applaud you is you start in your 20s. That's amazing. And, you know, the advantage of not being perhaps a person who has to train longer is you get to, even if it's less money, if you start starting it soon, then the, you know, the magical power of compounding, as we all talk about, can kick in, right? So it's starting earlier with less can sometimes, you know, be as good as starting more with more later.
Oh, it's so true. And like I mentioned, my husband's in the construction industry. And the same's true of like electricians, right? Who can start when they're 19, for example. They'll end up retired at 40, where most of PAs, NPs are like still dealing with student loan debt. So the ability to start early with less training actually is a real advantage in the world of, you know, buy and hold investing.
What would you do differently knowing what you know now? If you had to start off again to go through PA school and everything?
Honestly, not much. I don't think I would have ever learned the investing lessons on the back end if I hadn't have had the experience of feeling like my student loan approach was a mistake. And I also don't think that I would have ever had the self-discipline to really control my overhead expenses the way that we did to build assets if I hadn't first done that to deal with my student loan debt. So in a way, I kind of view it as a blessing that I came out with a bunch of private student loan debt that wasn't PSLF eligible and just kind of got forced into this rabbit hole. I'm not sure that, you know, I think the lessons stack in a way that favors you at the end. And I don't know if things would have turned out the same had I not had that experience.
What are beliefs or frameworks you live by now that you've been doing this for almost a decade?
No, completely different than when I started clinical medicine. I would say that number one thing is that I completely changed who I surround myself with and who I will let speak into my life on certain topics. And I'm sure you being the coach that you are the exact same way. When I, you know, started saying, hey, I'm going to pay off my debt quickly, or I'm going to try to build wealth, the few people that were aware of that would make negative comments or you know, say something that made you feel like you're crazy, you're different, you're dumb. And I let that reflect in the way that I viewed my own journey. Over time, I learned to like turn down the megaphone on those people. And the only people who I will even consider what they think about my wealth building journey are people that have more wealth than me. And they never have anything negative to say about anyone's attempts to get there, right? So that's probably the number one shift that I've made.
You've been coaching now how long, would you say?
I think about 6 years at this point.
6 years. What's the, I like to use this term, head trash. What's the favorite juicy piece of head trash that you get from some of your clients? Like, what's the one that you're like, all right, you take a deep breath. You're like, all right, let me help you work through this.
Well, for one, the idea that the fast track to wealth is paying off your student loans as quickly as possible, and that PSLF is a gamble. I know, obviously, with recent politics.
What does PSLF stand for?
Public service loan forgiveness.
Okay, I see.
That's a gamble. I think that's probably one of the biggest myths. But then the second one is just like, well, you know, I put 4% in my 401k. I've put some money every month in my Roth IRA. Like, I'm doing well. And that idea of like, that's enough without having any awareness of, hey, what's an inflation adjusted retirement look like? What's it look like to actually be financially independent at 65 versus 55? And having some real like numeric background to this is a good plan. I think that's actually probably the biggest, what did you call it? Brain trash? I forget.
Head trash,
yeah, that people have.
Yeah, okay. And tell me about your program and how you started that and how do you spend your time now? Like, let's say you got family time, you're working as a critical care and cardiology PA, and you got coaching, and you got, you know, that sounds like you want to be a sommelier.
I just like wine.
Yeah. So
I'm just kidding. I like to learn, but
yeah. So how do you, what does your like schedule or work week look like?
So I actually work nights for critical care, and I work like long blocks. So I'll do an 84-hour week, 7/12s in a row, and then I'll be off for a prolonged period at a time. Sometimes that's 2 weeks, sometimes that's 5 weeks.
Oh,
I'm part-time now. Yeah, so that's really nice.
You stack it on, knocking out of the way, and then now you're sort of like, it's almost like a locum's lifestyle, yeah.
It is very much like a locum's lifestyle. And then I spend the rest of the time either working on my business or being with my family, which right now I have a 3.5-year-old and a 5-week-old. And so I'm in a season where the kids stuff has really taken a front seat. And, you know, just a few years ago, I would say I was spending more time clinically and more time in business. And now I've kind of shifted that for a few years. But that's honestly the beauty of putting in some work financially on the front end, is that when life kind of shifts, you have the ability to shift and you can make decisions based on how you want to spend time and what's fulfilling and not necessarily what's the most lucrative.
So
blessing.
Would you say when you're practicing for the fun of it? I mean, you're at the point where since you can take so long periods of time off, you enjoy still practicing and you're practicing and it's nice income, but at some point it will be optional. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. Honestly, I could probably quit tomorrow and be fine, but I really genuinely like it. And I like it a lot more because I have the ability to work fewer hours. And so in a field that's, you know, typically a high ranked, like one of the top 10 subspecialties for burnout, I have actually managed to not be burnt out in critical care. And it's really because I don't have to work myself into the ground in order to justify, you know, a certain income or a certain FTE. And that, I think, is the reason I still love it, to be honest.
And then how do you help doctors and other healthcare practitioners avoid lifestyle inflation? You know, as their salary increases, they have the tendency to also increase their expenses and overhead, like you mentioned.
Yeah, that's honestly, I think that's hard for everyone in medicine. And a lot of it comes from this general idea in our world that your lifestyle is equated to your title and not necessarily how long you've had the title, you know, so like you become whatever, a PDA, for example, and you have, you know, six-figure income. And so then you pull in the parking lot or you're like in your neighborhood and you feel as though your house or your car should be the same as your colleague who's had the income for 10 years, right? And you've had the income for 10 minutes. And so we make lifestyle decisions based on that. I think the best thing you can do is allow your lifestyle to lag by at least 1 year, meaning like, you know, for example, I changed jobs and had a substantial pay raise when I did that, but I changed nothing for 1 year, invested the difference, and then increased lifestyle a little bit, and then kind of repeated the same thing as income increases. That delay will help some, but the biggest piece, I think, is really minding your overhead. Most people, pardon me, think it's like Starbucks or, you know, something like that that really matters. And that stuff just doesn't, you know, you can really do well financially spending on some key things. Like, we travel a ton. And I mentioned I have expensive taste in wine. And like, I don't have any shame about spending money on those things. But then we've been really mindful of like auto expenses, for example, or overhead with a mortgage. You know, you can have like a really nice car, but then maybe you're willing to house hack or something to accommodate the difference elsewhere. And having the, I think, humility.
Pick your things that you want to have.
Yes.
Like, you can have anything. You may not be able to have everything right now, but yep, you will all the time. You know, yep, the number one expense, I think you'd have to agree with me, is taxes. And so I assume that as you become savvier in your financial journey, you've obviously dug into taxes and figure out how to optimize it for yourself and your husband. Is that something you really help your coaching clients dive into?
Yeah, we talk a lot about that. I will say, you know, in the absence of real estate or business ownership, it is a little tricky to have big needle movers. We've used the short-term rental tax loophole several times in order to save, you know, multiple 10 figures on taxes each time. And then I think, you know, ultimately my husband will probably pursue real estate professional status given the nature of his skill set so that we can continue to save taxes that way. But most of those things require you to have the ability to invest in some of that stuff. And so a lot of times you kind of get stuck, I think, at the beginning professionally, just like, oh, I got to pay these taxes. But if you're smart about it and you get some traction, then you can get some of these big needle moving things available to you, and you can actually change your tax bill a lot.
What's the one or two pieces of advice that really shaped who you are in the last 5 years?
Man, I think the first is, number one, investment always in yourself. I've spent a lot of money on courses, coaching, you know, all of the things to advance myself. And then that's created more skills, more income, more flexibility and things over time. So that's probably the number one. And actually, I think number two would probably be that the number two investment is your health, which is funny, speaking to a functionally medicine trained physician. Yeah, I think I've shifted to recognize that, hey, you know, when I'm doing the wealth building process, there is a balance there between creating the highest income or, you know, income potential now, and making sure that my health, both physical and mental, is preserved so that my income capacity is preserved for the long term.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's two cornerstones. I have a concept called the 8 forms of wealth, and really mindset, or your investing yourself, is obviously number one, but vitality is not too far behind.
Yeah.
So, you know, in your journey, you've read a lot of books, I'm assuming. Readers are leaders. Give me a couple that, and try not to do the ones that everyone talks about. Is there some more of the off the beaten path ones that have really helped influence you?
Actually, yeah, I think the number one mindset book I've ever read is called The Alchemist by Paulo something. Have you heard it? Read it?
Paulo Coelho. Yeah, very nice.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite.
I haven't heard that one in a while. It's good.
That's been a reread for me. But in terms of like money specific books or business books, what are you thinking? Or across the board?
Yeah, anything. What anything that's made an impact on you, or that you had a big moment after reading it?
I think the whole series of 10x is easier than 2x, and Who Not How, like that collection of three, that's probably the most transformative books like group that I have read, which is a little bit more business and personal development focused, but those were really transformative concepts for me.
So if a person wants to have a family, have kids, pursue their passions, still work in medicine, be a millionaire, and then still be married, there's a way to do it all.
There's a way.
Yeah, and it's about intention, it's about declaration, I think. It's about bringing on a team. It's realizing and getting knowledge beyond medicine, right? You have your, I could put in a central line in, but that's different than setting up a Roth IRA or doing a 1031 or something like that. So learning to balance beyond just, you know, wealth beyond medicine, is the key. And then it's also knowing where you're going. So do you have a goal? Do you have a big... Is it a number, or is it a trajectory you want to achieve, or is it a lifestyle? What is that at the end of the rainbow for you?
It's funny, that's ever shifting. I did have a goal net worth in mind, but lately I have been really thinking maybe a little bit along the different line. Have you read, I think it's The Five Types of Wealth by Sahil Bloom?
Yeah.
The concept of legome, that part is in there about like what is enough. My husband and I actually have just been having conversations around that, like what is enough and what is the lifestyle that we're actually trying to create, and then nothing in excess of that. And so, yeah, it's kind of shifting a little bit. And I think having a second kid maybe shifts that a little bit more. And I think I've maybe undervalued some of the time freedom and overvalued some of the wealth piece. And so it's rebalancing. But yeah, that's the nice thing I think about trying to be someone who leads an examined life is that you give yourself the freedom to change the goal.
Yeah, I love that. I love the fact that you said examined life. That's right. It's like an intentional life. And that concept of enough is powerful because, you know, you can always do N+1 till infinity, right? So I like that. Sometimes we, at the beginning of our lives, we want what we don't have, which was financial freedom. A lot of us are middle class or lower middle class or whatever growing up, and we want all the things that we're quote unquote deprived of. But then as you start attaining it, there's always a price to pay. And so, you know, there's a good book I'd recommend if you haven't read it yet. Die with Zero by Bill Perkins.
I have read it.
And so, you know, he talks about like, if you actually create too much wealth and you don't end up actually utilizing it, then that's excess hours or time or energy wasted that you could have reallocated to something else. So there's sort of a delicate balance, you know, of you want some surplus, but not too much.
Yeah, that was an interesting book. I do think mathematically, man, that's hard to do, to die with zero when there's so many variables. But the concept, though, is a really, really excellent point.
Cool. How can people, you know, physicians and 4MDs, all these different folks, how can they learn more about what you have to offer? How can they get into your ecosystem and learn about your journey and your strategies?
The easiest thing to do is to head to our website, millionairesinmedicine.com, and join our free community. It's hosted on the school platform. We have about 5,500 medical professionals inside having conversations about negotiation, student loans, investing, real estate. That's the first step I would take. We post free resources in there at least once a week, and you can get all sorts of video trainings and stuff. Again, no cost, just hop in and start chatting with other people.
That's awesome. That's great. And if I could ask you a question, what's the impact you want to have on the world?
Oh, that's a good question. Actually, this is a funny thing, but I think actually if I died with just knowing that every single family that I encountered had the ability to have some type of estate plan and raise kids that are financially literate, that would actually be enough. Just that. I think that would change the way so many family dynamics are, if they could have a little bit of peace in their home surrounding money. And then if the whole next generation could come up with some money skills, learn from their parents, I feel like the whole world, fast forward 2-3 generations, would look completely different.
That's awesome. That's a huge goal. That'd be great.
That is a huge goal.
Well, thank you, Kristen, for being on the podcast. Appreciate you guys. Check out her information. All of it will be in the show notes below. And listeners, thanks again for supporting the podcast and the YouTube channel. I really appreciate you all. And until next time, be phenomenal.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Limitless MD. If you found value from this episode, I encourage you to share this episode with a friend and let me know by leaving a review. For more information, make sure you check out the links in the show notes below or simply visit vikramraya.com. Until next time, be phenomenal.